This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at Reach 2019, held on March 22 and 23, 2019, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Good morning, everyone. So some people get to have dolls, and others get to have chickens. My name is Stephen Gingrich, as you know, and I would just love to ask each one of you where you're from. That question always gets me. Because when people ask me, you meet somebody for the first time and they ask your name, and then the next question is, where are you from? And I say, well, I'm from Canada. Well, no, I'm not. I'm actually from Guatemala, but I'm not from there either. And I feel like I need 10 minutes to kind of tell the story and explain to them why that doesn't fit into just a one-word answer for me. Because it doesn't. I'm not going to assume that we all know what third culture kids are. It's a new concept, actually. When I was a third culture kid back in the day, it hadn't been invented yet that I knew of. The problems that I faced and the ways I felt, there were a few people that seemed to understand it, but there was no term for it. So a third culture kid is simply someone that grows up outside of their parents' home culture. And so as a kid growing up, we would go on furlough. We'd go home for furlough, but it felt like anything but home. It wasn't home to me. Home was back in the jungle with my pet monkey. So my parents had a culture, and that's part of their culture, and that culture was part of our home. My friends and neighbors, they had a culture, and I actually got used to that culture, and I really liked it. But nobody calls me a Guatemalan. Absolutely no one says, hey, Stephen, you're a Guatemalan. But I don't really fit in Canada either. Growing up in another culture is really exciting, and it's really a great adventure. And I see a lot of you nodding your heads, and you've been there. You've done that. On my fourth birthday, we left Guatemala suddenly because a good friend of my father's had been killed, John Troyer. Some of you may have read the book, Waiting the Dawn. And so my family was one of those missionary families that fled the country and left. And they didn't know when they were going to go back. And they didn't know if they were going to go back. In fact, they did this strange thing that the men drove the vehicles with a bunch of this stuff through Mexico, and the women and the children flew. And the day that they separated, or the day before they separated, was my fourth birthday. And that's the first memory I have as a child. All the missionaries standing around the big mission-based kitchen, and someone had baked a pineapple upside-down cake. And I don't know why they did that when they were fleeing, but they did. And everyone, I can still picture it in my mind, they were around the room, and they tried to sing Happy Birthday to this little four-year-old, one of the family's children, right? And as missionaries, you grow up as family. The other missionary children, even though you're not related to them at all, you're closer to them than your own cousins. And you grow up that way, and they're like cousins. And they couldn't get through the happy birthday song because someone started crying, and then everybody started crying. And the men and the women...
What year was that?
That was 1981. The women and the children flew, like I said, and the men didn't know. The couples really didn't know if the men were going to get through Mexico okay. And that was my first introduction to Canada. We had been to Canada once before when I was three. I don't remember that. And I had trouble speaking with my grandma because I spoke Spanish. I understood English, but I couldn't speak English. I could only speak Spanish, and she didn't understand any Spanish. So we hung out in the strawberry patch together and got along well, I guess, because I really liked her strawberries, and she liked feeding them to me. But those are some of the issues that you encounter as a third culture kid. And then our family was in Canada, and my younger sister was born, and the rest of my siblings were all born in Guatemala except her. She was born a month or two after we fled the country. So she's kind of paid for that the rest of her life because she doesn't have Guatemalan citizenship like the rest of us siblings. I was enrolled in public kindergarten, and that was an experience. We found my old kindergarten report card a couple of years ago, and as a family, we laughed about it because I was that quiet kid that the teacher wrote how I would go out at recess time by the road and just watch the trucks go by. And I would ask the teacher where they were going and what they had in them. That was my main interest. I was in a world that I didn't understand. This is my kindergarten picture, and I look at it today, and that is a total Guatemalan stance for a picture. And you see that nobody else in the picture is doing that. They're just not. You grow up with a family that's not your own, not your blood family. This is the man in this picture, and I should say right here and now that the pictures that I'm showing are kind of random pictures to just give you a bit of an idea of what I'm talking about. This man's name is Salvador, which is Savior, and you probably don't have a friend that's called Savior, but I do. And he's kind of like an uncle. His wife is a member of our church, and he's never become a Christian. But I'm very close to this man. He was like an uncle growing up. He was the man that would come and tell my dad that I was driving my bike too fast down the hill from town. And he always looked out for me, and he's probably saved my life several times. He's the man that would go with me to buy pickup trucks to make sure that I was getting a fair deal. And he taught me how to do that. This is my family in my town where I grew up, where I spent the first 4 years of my life. My mom and my dad. My dad is American, and I have three citizenships, actually, because my dad is American. And when he was called up for the Vietnam War, he became a conscientious objector, and they sent him to Guatemala. My mom was a Canadian nurse, and that's how I got the Canadian citizenship. And she went to Guatemala to do nursing there and to help the poor people and met my dad. And they fell in love and got married and were living in Guatemala when I was born. And so by birth, I have the third citizenship. And I do have three passports, and I do have to keep them up. And it sounds amazing, you know, but it's actually kind of a pain because you have to keep those passports vigente, which in English is current, I guess. It does come in handy, though, sometimes. Because, like, the time I got to the airport and they said, sir, your passport's expired. You're flying to Canada today, but this thing's expired. And I said, oh, what to do? Would an American passport work? Did you know that it is a felony to enter a country unless you use the right passport? So whenever I enter the U.S., I have to enter as a U.S. citizen. And I always have to kind of stop and think because my family's traveling with me and none of them are American citizens yet. And I say, yeah, we're three Canadians and one American. And it just seems strange. And then when I go into Canada, then I'm a Canadian. So kind of you're always going home. But you get the point. You know, you don't really fit anywhere. I spent 30 of my 41 years of my life in Guatemala, and so that's three quarters of your life. But nobody says to me, oh, you're so Guatemalan, until I'm in Canada or in the U.S., and then it starts sticking out. They don't really accept me as one of them, and in Guatemala, I'm always the gringo. And people wonder why I'm there. They say, oh, you must like our country better than yours. You really like it here, don't you? I guess it's purer air, and you can just breathe the clean air of the jungles. Some people actually wonder if maybe I've done some sort of crime in the U.S., and I'm in Guatemala just trying to stay under the radar until Interpol catches up. And yeah. And there are differences between Canadians and Americans, too. Did you know that? We see that a lot in missions and with the missionaries that come. Canadians and Americans are very, very different. And so you'll have to talk to me about that if you want afterwards, because I just don't know who you are, whether you're Canadians or Americans. But really great people. And growing up as a missionary kid, you have such a wealth of a circle of friends, and they are like families. Americans, in general, tend to think that the world kind of revolves around the U.S. And there's this T.J. Maxx story that I love to tell, how we went to T.J. Maxx one time when we were back in the States, and we had never been there before. My wife really liked it because they had some really great stuff at some really great prices. And she was just enthralled with this T.J. Maxx store. And she said to the gal, she said, are there T.J. Maxx stores in Canada? Oh, she said, they're all over the world, in America at least. And so we tell the T.J. Maxx story. Canadians in general, I found really great to work with in the sense that they tend to come into a new situation, into a new culture with the attitude, what can I learn from the people here? They do it so different, but what can I learn from them? And I think that's the attitude that Christians should have in general. We could talk about warm culture and cold culture, and that's a lot of fun. I find great humor in sarcasm, and my Guatemalan friends don't really get sarcasm, and so I have to watch that. And I honestly have gotten myself into trouble a lot of times because I say sarcastic things and they think I'm serious. They, on the other hand, lie, and that's okay for them. And you grow up with that, and you kind of start understanding, you know, and you do. There's this question that we ask each other sometimes in missionary settings, you know, how Guatemalan are you? How adapted to the culture are you? What culture is stronger for you? Is it the warm culture or the cold culture? And so you can do the little test. Just think for a minute. Let's say that not all sins are equal. Like, we know that sin is sin, and that there are sins unto death, and there are sins that are not unto death. But let's say that you have to say which one's worse. So which is the worst sin? Lying or getting angry? And that's a simple test. A warm culture person will tend to tell you that lying is all right. I mean, we all do, right? Getting angry, you're not allowed to do. And as cold culture people, we get angry all the time. You know, we just say, I'm sorry, I got angry. But I have heard my Guatemalan friends tell North Americans, I simply cannot trust you anymore because you got angry once. And they'll hang on to that. And they'll remember it for years and years because they got angry. And so therefore, I cannot trust you. But you do understand it, or we tend to understand it as cold culture or North Americans. I can hear people saying, I can hear North Americans saying to my Guatemalan friends, I simply cannot trust you because you lied to me. You lied to me. I'm not trusting you anymore. I can't. You'll have to earn that trust back, and it's going to take time. So the cultures collide. Being a third culture kid, I've described as is sort of like being a sandwich. You're sandwiched between these two colliding forces. Probably some of the worst time in my life was spent in cross-cultural ministers' meetings, of all things, because I would sit there and I would see the two sides. You know, and sometimes you'd actually try to help, and it kind of made it worse. because they don't understand each other. There are some obvious things that are happening. I mean, they're so obvious. The Guatemalans are using, you know, they're communicating, but the North Americans aren't getting it. And you can see where the North Americans are coming from, but it's just too cold and hard and strong for the Guatemalans, and they walk away offended. And so it's an awful feeling. About the lying thing, so is it a lie if everybody knows that it's a lie? Think about that for a bit, because Guatemalans are really, really good at handing out, like, you ask me a question, I'll tell you what you want to hear, but I'll also do the body language, and I'll let you know that I am completely stringing you a line, just so you know. I mean, they'll let you know with their body language, and we tend to, you know, well, he said it, that's what he means. This was my family growing up in El Chal. Like was mentioned, there was a civil war going on when I was born, and we fled the country when I was 4. We came back to Canada as a family, and we all just relate to that in different ways, don't we? We were in Canada for a year, and after a year, we went to back to Guatemala and lived in Guatemala City. We didn't move back to the jungle town, but we would visit there as often as we could. There was a church there, and my dad would go to do church work. One time we were traveling there, and we saw a lot of army trucks, and we were actually passing the army trucks. And after a while, we saw that there was army down in the ditch, and kept traveling. And all at once, we heard gunfire up in the jungle that was up on the hill on the far side of the road. And the army from the low side started firing back, and we were actually caught in a crossfire. And as a little boy, 7 years old or whatever, I remember hearing the bullets whine. That was my first introduction to what that sounds like as it was going over the vehicle. And we drove fast and got out of there and made it safely to our destination that night. But you grow up in a totally different world. Then we moved back to Canada when I was 8, and I'm very grateful to my parents for making that move. That's why I'm speaking English to you today. That certainly was a great experience in my life. However, it's not easy to move from one place to another and from one culture to another. We moved the day before our flight to the States, I think was the day before or the day after my great-grandmother died. So we no more than got to the States. And I remember being in this station wagon, and it was summertime, and I was about 8 years old. And my older brother and sister said, "You don't do that. You can't do that." But I couldn't wait anymore. And so there were no bathrooms in sight, so I just went behind a tree at the funeral home. Well, my parents made sure that I understood that you'd never do that again in the U.S. I mean, that's just not acceptable to do that. My older brother and sister, they had their moment too. They couldn't find my sister at school. She should have been in class. And finally, the teacher realized there's somebody missing here. And she figured out who it was. It was my sister. And they looked through the school. They couldn't find her. Finally, they found her in the bathroom. And there she was. Cold water. Hot water. Cold water. She couldn't believe it. At the same sink. Hot and cold water. And one of our VS people just said this recently, just in the last week. They said, you know, it's great having somebody else in mission work. A friend, I guess, wrote her and said that they went to another mission base, and she got a hot shower. I mean, how exciting, you know? And it's just, it's part of life. Another time, they did a fire drill at school, and there was one person missing. They did their count. All the classes had the count, and they were one short. And so they counted again. And there was still one short. And so they realized there was really one person still in the building after they had done the fire drill. And they figured out which class it was. And they went through the building and they found my brother. He was in the library reading a book. He had heard the buzzer go, but he had no idea what that was. You know, thankfully, there was no real fire. Growing up in Guatemala, my worst fear was being kidnapped. If I would lose sight of my dad in a store, I would go ballistic. Like, I would be screaming, crying, couldn't wait to find him, because I was sure in my little mind, my young mind, I was sure he was going to go home and not come back. And until he got back and remembered where he had left me, I would have been picked up. And the truth is, when I was growing up, it was a real fear. A lot of children did get kidnapped, and especially from wealthy people, like my father was seen as. When I was 4 and 7, in our little jungle town, we were one of the only families that had a vehicle. Everybody else walked or had, the really wealthy people had a motorcycle, but we had a vehicle, and it was kind of the village's vehicle, and a lot of people used that vehicle. Well, my mom, I guess, realized that my fear of kidnapping. And so she said to me one day, she said, do you worry about being kidnapped? I said, well, yeah, actually, I do. I think, you know, maybe what would I do? Or she said, you don't have to worry about it. You know, don't worry about being kidnapped. Especially at night. If they kidnap you at night and they see you in the morning, they'll bring you back. And that comforted my little heart. She was joking, and I just laugh about it now. I can't imagine, but no, that's what she said, and it brought me great comfort. When I was 30, 10 years ago, my greatest fear was being gunned down in the street, and it was a real fear, probably. I realize now that it was simply a fear and probably not likely to happen, but I think part of that was the trauma of seeing many of my friends killed. Like, two hands is not enough to count how many of my acquaintances and friends were killed 10 years ago. And it was really awful. And it does something to you. The trauma kind of messes with you. And then the little stuff becomes big stuff. And you're just not sure. It's unsettling. So now, Brenda and I have children. We have two. And Jeffrey here, this is a picture of him when he was 3. I looked for a picture of him in his blue pajamas in order to tell you the story, but I couldn't find one. When Jeffrey was 3, he went with me over to the school for some reason that morning, and he was with me when I got a call from a good friend of mine whose stepfather had been gored by a cow. And so I didn't take the time to go home and drop Jeffrey off. I just got to my truck, drove the 7 or 8 kilometers out to this town to see if I could help this man, because he was a stepfather of a good friend. And we got there, and the people were there around him, and he was unconscious. And there was little Jeffrey, 3 years old, in his blue pajamas, sitting on the little console between the two front seats of the pickup truck when they loaded the man in. And he had blood all over his shirt. And I tried to explain to Jeffrey that a cow had hurt him and that he was really sick. And we drove as fast as we could to our clinic. And Jeffrey was there when they took him into the clinic. He died in the truck on the way to the clinic. And Jeffrey was there when they covered him up with a sheet. And he was there, you know, when the nurses tried to get vitals on him and stuff. And that evening, death happens so fast in Guatemala. That evening, we were at the wake where they have a service and they sing. And people stay up all night to just not leave the dead body alone. Don't you dare leave that dead body alone. And so they stay there all night and drink coffee and accompany the family. And the family stays up all night and makes food. And that evening, I was holding Jeffrey, and I was thinking, you know, I wonder how he's processing this. And I said to Jeffrey, I said, do you remember the man that got hurt by the cow? Yep. I said, where is he now? In the box. And I said, then what? Then they'll put him in the ground tomorrow. and he was 3 years old. And that's how it happens. That's how children learn about life. There you see Jeffrey again with some of his best friends. A couple months ago, he was doing some CLE work in his reading, and he had this question that he got wrong. He was supposed to write whether it would be probable, unlikely, or impossible. And the question was, I could go on a trip by myself. He answered, probable. Because when he was 5, he went on a 2-week trip with Sandra, the pharmacist from our clinic. She was like his second mother, and he honestly went on a trip with her back to her country, to the mountains, not a different country, but to her area, to the mountains. He ate their food and slept in their beds and sat by their fire, and they're from an indigenous community from San Bartolome, if any of you know about that. For third culture kids, school and education is another thing. It's been something that I've been majorly concerned about with our children. A lot of third culture kids or missionary kids struggle with school. I have seen just too much of that. A lot of missionary children have trouble reading in English and the other language where they were raised. It doesn't have to be that way, but it often is. They have trouble writing in one or many times both languages. They have trouble expressing themselves, as you've seen I do a little bit. They have trouble speaking fluently and correctly in both languages. I have a friend that when we talk in English. When we pray, he prays in Spanish. That's just how it's best and easiest for him. Because of this, our family, a family of four, plan to move to Canada at the end of April. And it's something that we've planned to do. We've talked about it for probably 10 years, and we actually started taking active steps about 3 years ago to move our family to Canada. And some people wonder about that, and rightly so. And so I'd like to just explain a little bit what we're doing. So our two children, Jeffrey's 10 and Jasmine's 6, they've never lived in Canada, apart from a furlough here or there, or a visit where we're, you know, speaking at different churches or visiting a lot of people. They've never lived in Canada. They don't know what it's like to just have grandpa down the road. And they don't have cousins that they really know well. Thanks to social media and things like WhatsApp groups, our families exchange pictures and what we're doing with each other a lot easier than we used to. But still, our children don't really know their cousins. And so we feel like the right thing for our family to do is to focus on our children and allow them to experience the Canadian culture before they're teenagers. And so for Jeffrey, that's coming right up. So we do plan to make that move. It would be a lot easier if we could tell the people in Guatemala, the people we work with, people from our church, when we're planning to come back. But we've decided not to do that. We've seen a lot of missionaries leave with good intentions to come back, and they never do. And that is always hard as well. I think it's good for a child to spend time in the home culture of their parents. Some people have expressed that it really doesn't matter, does it, whether they know about Canada or not. And I really think it does, because they look North American. They look like Canadians. They look like Americans. If it weren't for that, I probably wouldn't be so focused on doing what we're planning to do. But they look like Canadian children or American children. Everybody expects them to at least have an idea of what that means, and they really don't. Here you have a picture of Jeffrey, who's in the picture, nine. He goes down to the clinic, and he volunteers on afternoons, and they give him work. And he gets to do that. He gets to cut up pills and put labels on, and he just hangs out with the nurses there, and they enjoy it, and he enjoys it, and it all works. And Dad is probably too busy, and Mom may be taking care of the neighbors right then. And so that's kind of how you grow up. And I think it's so important for families and third culture kids to, at an early age, experience North American culture, especially in our Mennonite communities, because as a third culture kid growing up in Guatemala, I have this little theory, and it is my own, so just take it or leave it. Is that you grow up like a crown prince. I grew up like a crown prince. Not because my parents pampered me. Believe me, I had to toe the line with them. But with the Guatemalan people, I got anything I wanted, whenever I wanted, because of whose son I was. And my children will tend to grow up the same way. We stress with their teachers at school. No special treatment, okay? It's just another one of the class. You know, he stays in for recess too. Whatever you've got to do to make him listen, you're the boss, you're the teacher, no special treatment. We say it over and over again, and it never happens, because he's the one white boy in the sea of Guatemalan faces. Jeffrey has friends, like you saw a slide ago. Most of them are older than him. When they get together to play, he's the boss. I don't like it, but what can I do? He calls the shots. He's the best reader. He understands. He tells them stuff they've never heard of before. He gets his books out and shows them pictures. And he's growing up thinking that he's really quite intelligent, actually, because he can compare himself among his peers. Two of his friends are 13 and 14-year-olds, and he's 10. And he calls the shots. He's got a wake-up coming in about 2 months. Jasmine's 6. She teaches school. She's got a little whiteboard in the front room, and the 12-year-old neighbor girl comes over, and she's the student. How does that work? Sometimes the Jeffrey's 13 and 14-year-old friends, they come, and if Jeffrey's off doing something else, they're students for Jasmine, and she teaches them. We do have a maid, and that's something that I think about. It's high time we get into a situation where we don't. And they put their own shoes away. And so that's the growing up as a crown prince theory. What I've shared today is my experience. It's how it was for me. And it's probably not like this for other people. We are all different, and cultures are all different. But growing up as a third culture kid gives you some incredible advantages. And that's what I'd like to close with. Don't think about the fact that you don't really fit in anywhere. That's okay. That's what Christians are really called to. We live in the world, but we're not of the world. Being a third culture kid gives you incredible advantages. To be able to understand two or more languages, that's amazing. To understand the functions of two different cultures is even a greater gift. And if you have that this morning, consider it a gift. Yes, it can cause problems. Yes, it feels sometimes like you're torn in two, or that you're living like a sandwich between these two opposing forces. But use it as an advantage. You have a wide circle of friends. You can identify with other cultures and backgrounds even though you don't understand them. It's as if you're given an extra little bit of grace for those people who are different. And my experience has been that I just naturally accept people that are different than me. It's seemingly easier than some of my peers, simply because I grew up with people that looked different than me, who thought different than me, and that's okay. And I think spiritually and developmentally and in their identity, that's probably the third culture kids' greatest challenge. They don't fit inside the box. And so it doesn't work well to try to put them in a box. And so they live with a lot of misunderstanding. They're able and willing to do just about anything. And they can. They can do just about anything. They've grown up there. They've grown up riding around in the back of pickup trucks when they're three. And it's okay. And nothing happens. They're flexible and adaptable to difficult situations. Thinking outside the box is just normal. That's not thinking outside the box. That's just thinking. Some disadvantages that I've seen and you may have found in your own experience as a third culture kid that you have to work with. I keep forgetting to advance these slides. You find it hard to commit to something long term. You may find it hard to keep a rigid schedule. And you're easily offended and find other people to be very judgmental. So those are some things you may have to work with. How to help them? I would say accept them unconditionally. Understand they may struggle to develop deep relationships. It's something we tend to do. And I find myself doing this. And I have not read extensively third culture kid books, but this is one thing that seems to be a recurring theme in some of the ones I've skimmed. We tend not to make deep relationships because we're always saying goodbye and it just hurts too much. I remember being 12 years old and now looking back, I see how odd this was. But we were leaving Canada. I said I was 12, I was actually 14. We were leaving Canada and we were planning to be in Guatemala for the next 3 years at least. And to my best friends and cousins, my first cousins, they came over to say goodbye. And the lady, you know, the women were crying. And the men, you know, they kind of stood around and talked about the truck because they didn't know what to talk about. And me and my cousins were there. And finally, the moment had come. They were ready to go back home. And the express purpose for coming over to our house was to say goodbye. And so I just went over and I said, see ya. We'll see ya. Okay, see ya then. And I turned around and I left. And thinking back, it was my way of protecting myself from the pain. So it was too hard to give a hug and say goodbye. It was just easier to say, see ya. And they still laugh about that. Matthew 19:29 offers comfort to me. It says, "And everyone that hath forsaken houses or brethren or sisters or father or mother or wife or children, or lands, for my name's sake, shall receive an hundredfold, and shall inherit eternal life." I'm not in it for the hundredfold. To me, it's just amazing that God put that verse in the Bible, because it tells me that God cares, and God knows, and God understands. I think about how the disciples, after Jesus' death and resurrection, went fishing. They kind of reverted to what they did before. I think they were confused. I don't mean to criticize them this morning. But those disciples had seen the miracles. They had gone out preaching. These are the men that had casted out demons. They walked every day with the person of perfection, perfect wisdom, absolute truth. These men watched the Gospels happen. They were there. And they were fishing? They were fishing. What's with that? And I asked this morning, I wonder how many third culture kids are out there today and they've just gotten comfortable to try to soothe the hurt. Because it's just too confusing. It just hurts too much to go in and use their incredible talents. They're tired of being hurt. They're tired of being misunderstood. They're tired of the conflict. Paul Laurence Dunbar was a black poet, a Negro poet, at the turn of the 19th century. His first couple articles were published in a very short short lifetime. There was a publication that didn't last very long. Let's go with that one. There was a publication that didn't last very long, but it was a publication in Dayton, Ohio, for the black people. It was published by an Orville Wright, a classmate of his in high school, and he was actually writing poems before he was out of high school. Orville Wright went on later than with his brother Wilbur, and they flew airplanes. It's the same Orville. But Paul Laurence Dunbar wrote a poem, and it says, "When all is done." When all is done and my last word is said, and ye who love me murmur, "He is dead," weep no more for fear that I should know, and sorrow too that ye should sorrow so. When all is done and in the oozing clay, ye lay this cast off hull of mine away. Pray not for me, for after long despair, the quiet of the grave will be a prayer. For I have suffered loss and grievous pain, the hurts of hatred and the world's disdain, and wounds so deep that love, well tried and pure, had not the power to ease them or to cure. When all is done, say not my day is o'er, and that through night I seek a dimmer shore. Say rather that my morn has just begun. I greet the dawn and not the setting sun when all is done. The phrase that sticks out to me is the part where it says, and wounds so deep that love, well tried and pure, had not the power to ease them or to cure. So there are some things you just live with. And you get used to it, and it's okay. But look at it as a gift. It's not something that everyone has. So I'd like to end 5 minutes early this morning in case you'd like to tell your story.
This recording and many others are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. For more information, call 1-814-789-4769 or visit us online at www.christianlearning.org.